Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 7, delivered on February 5, 2013. The title of this lecture is Taxes.
Today, taxes. As I promised, I will also be showing you part of a quiz. We'll work through a part of it together, and that should make it easier for you to do the quiz, which opens up tonight at 7 o'clock, and it'll be available through the 9th. So this little exercise I'll do will give you a good window on that. Be sure that you download the worksheet and get all the problem done before you open the quiz, so that you can just put the answers in where they go on the quiz itself. Other than that, though, what was I thinking? Oh, taxes, yes. Let me do a little bit on taxes, and then I'll do that problem with you. And then, because this is the internship fair tonight, I assume some of you are actually going to go and try to get internships. Okay, I'm going to let you go a little early today so that you can go over there. I'll be over there later on in case you need, you know, you get nervous, you can come up to me and I'll slap you around and make you tune you up if that's what you'd like. But I'll be over there later on myself just to show my glorious presence. But taxes. Let me start out with a couple of general ideas about taxes. First of all, excuse me here, let me kill that. When I say taxes, there are different kinds of taxes. And let me set this up and turn this on. Actually, maybe I should do it this way. Projector is on, that way I won't have as much noise. How the hell do you hear? No, I don't think that's going to be a good idea at all. So let me do it this way. I'll just use the old projector here. I'll write down a couple of concepts for you. Provided, that is, I have a dry erase marker. Did I forget all my dry erase markers today? I sure did. Let's see if this works. Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to break taxes down this way. First of all, you can have a tax that is a pure flat tax. Now, a flat tax is a specific amount of money that is paid. It doesn't depend upon your income. It doesn't depend upon how much you bought, whatever. It is just an amount of money. And sometimes a flat tax is proportional tax. It's called a flat tax, but they are not the same. A flat tax would be something like a license fee. So, for example, if you look like a hunter, okay, you don't. Okay,
I'll hunt ladies.
Yes, of course. So you have a hunting license, and I charge you $50. That's a flat tax. It doesn't matter how much you make. It's just $50. A driver's license fee, a license plate fee, those are flat taxes, just an amount of money. Now, notice that as if it's a true flat tax, it is actually regressive on income because it hits a person with lower income harder than it hits a person with more income. So, for example, if your income is $5,000, then a $50 license would run you 1% of your income. But for a person who makes $500,000, it's a considerably smaller proportion of income. So we would say that a flat tax on income, a flat tax is actually regressive on income because it hurts the poor more than the wealthy. And we'll get into a little more of that here in a bit. But the next kind of tax would be a proportional tax. That is a tax that is a percentage of something. A percentage of your income, a percentage of your sales, something like that. So the classic example of a proportional tax is a sales tax. A sales tax is a percentage of how much you have bought of certain items. Now there are variations on the sales tax. In this country, we have the idea of the sales tax. You pay a certain percentage on certain goods at the retail level. In other countries, you have what is called a value-added tax, a VAT. So there is a proportional assessment on the value added at each stage of production. So if it goes from stage one to stage two and adds a value of $500, there's a percentage hit there. Then it goes from stage two to stage three, and there's $1,200 of value added. Then there's a percentage hit there. So you get this stacking effect. By the time it gets to the retail level, there's a whole lot of tax embedded inside of the price that the consumer pays. If you think about it that way, our sales taxes are actually just a one-stage value-added tax. In other words, the last stage, the retail stage, is where a tax is assessed, but it's not assessed back the line. So the proportional tax seems like a fair tax, and there's always been talk about turning our extremely complicated income tax into just a straight proportional tax. You make so much money, you pay 20% of your income. No loopholes, no deductions, that's it. It sounds wonderful in theory. I mean, it would basically, all the forms would go away and you just fill out a card. This is how much I made times 0.20 or 0.18, whatever the tax was. Send that amount to Uncle Sugar. And there you go. Sounds great. Sounds simple. It isn't. Because a proportional tax is actually a regressive tax. Let me explain it, why that's the case. There's this old theory. I'm sure some of you have heard it before. It's called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. Have you ever heard of it? Yeah, I'm getting nods of the head. For those of you who have never heard of Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, it works like this. Maslow proposed that there were layers, like a wedding cake. You fulfill the needs of the layer at the lower end, where they're more basic, more fundamental. And then you can go and fulfill needs at higher levels. The criticism of it is that, well, actually, you would be fulfilling needs all at different stages at all times. And that's true. But at the lowest level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, he said our most basic needs are food and sex. Now, that doesn't mean pizza and butt. Okay, yes, it does. Okay, once you've got some dinner and ass, then you know what I mean. You can fulfill the next layer of the hierarchy, which is for safety and shelter. As I used to teach in courses more relevant to this subject, you get your dinner, you get some fanny, and then you find a safe place with a shotgun and lock the door in case her brother shows up. Or her husband. And then above this, you would get your affiliation, more like fluffy stuff, affiliation with a group. And then above that, you would get your place within the group, identity within the group, Okay, I belong to Alpha Kappa Psi. And now I am the vice president of Alpha Kappa Psi. Or I now work for State Barn. Oh, I am an assistant manager of accounts receivable. And then you work your way up. And finally, at the top, there's this floating level called self-actualization, which is where you're on this road all your life, trying to find that place where it's sort of detached from the others, where you are okay with yourself. You are self-generating in your values, in your ego, and all of that good stuff. But let's take it back down to these two most fundamental levels. We all have them: food and sex, and safety and shelter needs. Whether you are a wealthy person or a miserably poor person, you have to have the same things. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had sex? Oh, bro. Yeah. And so, man's hard issue. You could be worth $1 million or have $10 to your name. Same thing. You want that. And you do want some food, too. Would you like some food? That's true whether you are a billionaire or a pauper. So you see, these things, you can't say, well, this wealthy person has special needs as opposed to the poor person who doesn't. We all have the same essential, we could put the same essential monetary value on these fundamental needs, whether you're rich or poor. So I can say, okay, let's take a person who is poor, makes $20,000 a year, and a person who is rich, who makes $2 million a year. They both have the same caloric intake need. They both have the same sex drive at the end of the day. Sort of. They both have the same need to have a place out of the rain where they won't get wet and cold and miserably hot. So we could say that in either case, $5,000 of their income is going to go to the fundamental caloric, butt, and housing needs. Now let's say that those needs are assessed a sales tax. Let's just, for easy purposes, let's say it's 10%. You say, well, they'll buy more. Well, no, we're talking about what they have to have. 10% on this amount that is fundamental to their lives. So that would be $500 a year for each of them in absolutely, I can't avoid it, sales taxes. Now let's look at the impact on their incomes. $500 out of the pocket of a $20,000 a year worker is going to be 2.5%. $500 in, you can't avoid it, sales taxes, because that's how you stay alive, is with that stuff. Out of a $2 million income is going to be 0.025%. A proportional tax on sales is a regressive tax on income. A proportional tax on sales is a regressive tax on income. Notwithstanding all of the wonderful things you hear about, well, we should be taxing consumption to encourage investment, you do that, you're going to create a tax that hits the poor more than the rich. That's why the rich are constantly, and their economists are constantly applauding this concept of a national sales tax to replace an income tax, because it'll hit the poor much harder than it hits the rich. A proportional tax on sales is a regressive tax on income, just like a flat tax is a regressive tax on income. That's why you will see flat taxes on the goods, the vice goods that the poor use, cigarettes, booze, and all those good things. Those are flat taxes, just a per unit amount, And so they will be disproportionately impacting the poor. Why is that? Because you do that to the rich, they'll replace you in Washington and in the state capitals. Now let's go to the two that are the biggies. The progressive and the regressive taxes. Income taxes. Now the regressive tax would assess a higher marginal tax rate on the poor than on the rich. In other words, on the first 20,000, maybe a 40% rate. On the next 50,000, a 35% rate. That's the way a regressive tax would work. Income tax. Believe it or not, there are some economists who want us, who have written many times over the many years, that we should go to a regressive income tax. Why? Because it would encourage the poor not to be poor anymore. I kid you not. The progressive tax assesses a higher marginal tax rate for higher income layers. So, for example, the first 20,000 would be taxed at 15%. The next 40,000 would be taxed at 20%, something like that. The extra dollar you earn would get hit with a higher tax if you slipped into a higher tier, a tax bracket. The theory of a progressive tax, which in some ways sounds unfair, and there are many who argue we've got to stop doing this because we're hurting the rich, and the rich are the ones who make the jobs. So what we would want to do is ask, is there a logic to a progressive tax? And there is. Goes back a long, long way. As a matter of fact, progressive taxes, the tax rates were much, much steeper historically than they have been over the past 40 years or so. But the idea of a progressive tax works like this. You and Bill Gates are walking down the street together. A $100 bill flips by on the sidewalk. Are you and Bill Gates both going to go for it with the same zeal? Probably not. I will take out children to get to that dollar, that $100 bill. I'll stop a bus if it goes into the street. I don't care. Bill Gates, he could use a $100 bill for toilet paper and he wouldn't notice it. You see, the idea there is, and there are economists who say, oh, no, 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 this isn't true. But a mainstream economist, and God, I don't want to call myself aligning with liberals, but a liberal economist would say there's a diminishing marginal utility to money. In other words, a wealthy person gets less extra pleasure out of an extra dollar than a poor person gets. So a $20,000 a year worker finds a $100 bill. What does he say? Yeehaw! I can buy myself some friends tonight. But a $2 million a year worker who finds a $100 bill says, huh, that's nice. I can buy another bottle of Chateau de Neuf de Derrière tonight, or something like that. What is that? French for ninth house of the... never mind. Okay, so you see, there is a legitimacy to the argument that a proportional tax is not an evil because a wealthy person doesn't get as much benefit. The other side of that, though, is that if you tax the wealthy worse than you do the poor, then that takes away income that they would use to create jobs. Your call which way you want to buy it. But we have a progressive tax system at the personal level, but also at the national level as well. I'm sorry, at the corporate level as well. Our tax system in the corporate realm assesses a higher rate to corporations that make more money. The tiers go up rather steeply. Now, your textbook has a good example of this in action. Bear with me. I'm going to try to get something up here on the overhead projector for you to see so you can get an idea of this. And this is in the textbook too, the marginal tax rates. Now they are going to be changing, I'm sure of that. The corporate tax rates are here. But if you can bear with me one moment, I'm going to try to pull up a schedule of marginal tax rates here for you to see. If I can possibly avoid using Wikipedia, I will. Okay, I'll get off my ass. Bear with me, let's see if I can find. You know what? I am going to find whoever's doing these stupid pop-ups, and I'm going to hurt. Okay. These are the ones for the coming year. Oh, great. Okay, there it is, yeah. And these are the same ones that are in the book as well, in your textbook, too. Let me kill this. There you go. Now, what that means is that if I get to the EBT line, the earnings before taxes line, and I'm reporting between $0 and $50,000, I will multiply that by 0.15, and that's how much I send Uncle Sugar. But if I came to $75,000, say I came to $75,000, I would pay 15% on the first $50,000, and then on the cap, the last $25,000, I would pay 25%. And it just works its way up the line. So if I were to make, let's say, $110,000 at the earnings before taxes line, the first $15,000 I would pay 15% on. The next $25,000, I would pay 25% on. And then on the next $25,000, I would pay 34%. And then on that last $10,000, I would get hit with 39% income tax. Let me tell you, speaking as an owner of a corporation, the sole shareholder, this is what we technically call a real pain in the ass. You see how quickly it gets up to the point where I am getting beaten up? At $110,000 a year, that's small change in the corporate world, and yet I am paying the highest tax bracket of all. And then you say, well, wait a minute. Do you notice something? The marginal tax rate starts to slide back down at those enormous earnings before taxes. So it's actually our corporate income tax structure is regressive, is progressive, but then it becomes regressive. I'm actually being punished for not creating more earnings before taxes than a giant corporation. Now, the idea here, it gets weird. What's going on here? The official explanation. Why is the marginal tax rate varying and going up and down here? The official explanation is, oh, well, that's the result of these extra taxes, like the alternate minimum tax that some companies have to pay, and it corrects for some loopholes. No. Mostly what this is the power of extraordinarily large corporations to have their taxes low. They simply contribute to the campaigns. Their lobbyists are constantly beating up on their House of Representatives members and the senators, so they get a nice candy rate. And the people at the lower income levels in the small businesses, like mine, we don't have the money to go to Washington and hand out dollars to the people who make the tax laws. So we get hit hard. That's the reality of our tax system. So you might want to keep that in mind when you hear about tax reform. One possible way of tax reform, short of doing proportional taxes, would maybe to straighten this out so that small businesses, the real small businesses, aren't paying more in taxes on the last dollar they earn than ExxonMobil and Google and Intel and Apple are. That's the reality of the system now. Will it change? Yeah, I think it will, as soon as donkeys fly. That's all I'm going to do about that. I think I'm going to drop that subject before it starts to piss me off anymore. So let me kill that, and I'm going to do something else with you right now. Excuse me. Where is that document? Ah, there we go. I'm going to take you over here and do that problem that I promised you. Now, this is not the only part of the exam. There are two of these, and I'm going to do the first of them with you here right now. And then from there, I'll caution you that there is another page to this quiz beyond this first one that has some other problems in it. But there you go. Keep you busy tonight. Now, let me take this over here. Now, there's one of these for a company A, and one of them for a company B. Let me even zoom that out just a little bit. There. Now, this is the fill in the blank. I'm giving you these different pieces of information about a company. I give you the revenues are $200,000. The retained earnings are, at January 1, are $300,000. The dividends paid are $70,000. Retained earnings on December 31 are $270,000. The current assets are $80,000. The current liabilities as of December 31 are $40,000. Total liabilities December 31 are $140,000. Common stock and capital in excess of par December 31 is $520,000. And what you have to do is fill in the numbers that are not given, hoping that you don't make an arithmetic mistake. The other problem is like this one, except that you get different numbers, different slots are filled in, and you have to do it for that one as well as this one. It's like a puzzle. The first thing that you do when you are working on a puzzle is you find two stupid pieces that actually fit together. And that's what you're going to want to do here. So, without further ado, well, let's see what we can do. And I'm going to show you, actually, pretty much, there's some reason I can't get this to go down. That's going to hurt myself. Oh, well, I'm not going to get it to go down. So, well, it'd be nice to get net income, but we can't because we don't have the expenses. So revenues minus expenses would be net income, but that's not going to happen. I'm sure that I don't slide this off the screen for you guys. Okay, what else could we do? Well, we got current assets, but we'd need non-current to get total assets. Well, that sucks. Oh, wait, do you see something? Current liabilities? See, I've got my current liabilities, and I've got my total liabilities, so that would mean that I could fill in the non-current liabilities, because current liabilities plus non-current liabilities will equal total liabilities. So what if current liabilities are $40,000 and total liabilities are $140,000, what have I got? $100,000. And I actually make sure I don't make an arithmetic mistake, because I really honestly suck at arithmetic. Okay, well that's a relief. So, from there, what are we going to do? Well, here's an interesting thing right here. Retained earnings plus net income minus dividends gets you your retained earnings at the end of the year. Again, your retained earnings at the beginning of the year plus your net income minus your dividends gets you your retained earnings at the end of the year. So in other words, hidden in here, I should be able to get net income because I've got everything else. So I know that $300,000 plus whatever net income is minus $70,000 should equal $270,000. So, I'm going to write that right here. Retained earnings beginning plus net income
minus dividends should equal my retained earnings at the end. You see how it's a puzzle? In this case, I got retained earnings at the beginning are 300 grand. I don't know the net income, but I sure was given the dividends plus net income minus dividends of 70,000 should equal the retained earnings at the end, $270,000. Do you follow me on that? Make sure I don't want to walk along. It's just, you're going to use just different accounting formulas in doing this. So I've got 300,000 minus 70,000. That's 230,000. Oh, I'm sorry. That's 230,000, yeah. So net income plus 230,000 should equal 270,000, right? So I find that net income is 40 grand. You okay? Okay. Now, don't plow these. I mean, you'll have to pick for a while. On the other one, you'll have to do some other gyrations. But I promise you that it's doable. So now I can say, all right, I can put the $40,000 into that net income slot. And, oh, okay, so revenues, $200,000 minus the unknown expenses is $40,000. Well, what are expenses then? What is it? Yeah. Well, look at that.
What'd you do?
What I did was I said, well, I know my net income is $40,000, right?
Could you
see that? I'm just testing your ass to see if you can see a black screen what I'm writing. Okay. Yeah, I'm very upset with that. Okay. I found my $40,000 as net income. So I know that $200,000 minus expenses would have to be $40,000 so I can back into $160,000 for my expenses. Y'all good? Sweet. Okay, now. What the hell does that do me? Oh. And notice, I actually do these on the fly. I want you to see how I'm thinking because that's the best way to do it is to just see the workout in a person's mind. Okay, now, I know that total liabilities plus shareholders' equity, total shareholders' equity, I'm sorry. My ass. Okay. I'm sorry. Retained earnings at the end of the year plus shareholders' equity. Retained earnings at the end plus CS and capital should equal my total stockholders' equity. This is the one that would probably fog a lot of you. What the hell happened? Am I smoking weed? Why did it do that? There's not even a stupid button on this. Oh yeah, that's really going to help. Does anyone know where the do not suck button on this is? It's flipped. Oh, image rotation. Oh, there we go. I must have hit that. Oh. Don't ever let me near nuclear weapons. Okay, here we go. Retained earnings at the end plus common stock would be your total stockholders' equity in the company. Like I said, this is probably the one that would really kill you on this side. That's why I do this one with you. Because this one really is subtle. In other words, my retained earnings at the end, $270,000, plus my common stock and capital in excess of par, $520,000, should get me all of my stockholders' value. what they've earned along the way, plus what they raised in money from stock offerings. So if I work that out, 270 plus 520. Thank you. I would say I can do that, but I know darn well I would have screwed it up. Okay. So there we go. And now we're about to finish it. It's pretty much clean from here. Because I know that this owner's equity, $790,000, plus the total liabilities, $140,000, have to equal the total assets by the fundamental equation of accounting. Total assets equal liabilities plus owner's equity. So I know that your total liabilities, $140,000, plus your total stockholders' equity of $790,000 should buy me the same thing as total assets on the other side of the balance sheet. So in this case, I'd have $140,000 plus $790,000. Oh, help me out, for God's sake. $830,000. That's why I'm not an accountant. Okay, and finally, we've got one more thing, the non-current assets. Well, we know current assets are $80,000, total assets are $930,000. So that would mean that our non-current assets would have to be and there you go. It's finished.
What's the formula for that one?
Current assets plus non-current assets equal total assets. Now, I'm going to write some of these on the back of the sheet here in just a second, okay? I want to make sure you got all this down. Again, download this worksheet. Get everything done before you open up that full quiz. Don't try to do that quiz on the fly, for God's sake. Because all you're going to be asked is on these two sheets of this paper to put in the numbers where they go. Now I'm going to flip this over and I'm going to write a few things on here for you. First things first here. First things first. The fundamental one. Total assets equals total liabilities plus owner's equity. Now remember that that term owner's equity can come out as total stockholders' equity, total shareholders' equity. It can have different names. Now, a couple that are pretty, that are kind of like no-brainers for this. One is total assets equals current assets plus non-current assets. And then total liabilities equals current liabilities plus non-current liabilities. And a couple of others. Now, you probably know these, but when you're in the thick of one of these problems, you might forget one. So have the sheet with you when you're working on it. And you've got your revenues minus your expenses equals your net income. And again, like I said, these are kind of like no-brainers, but when you're in the thick of one of these problems, one of these can go out of your head, and then you say, well, what the heck? Best way is to use these formulas and just fill in the numbers that you know in each one of them and then just start working out the puzzle. So another one would be retained earnings at the beginning plus net income minus dividends equals retained earnings at the end. I'm thinking that's all you need. So the best attack on this problem is to lay out these formulas and then put in the numbers that you know. Just put them in to each of the formulas. You'll find that several of the formulas, there will be just one thing you don't know. You can work that out, and then you can have that to slot into another formula where there was more than one thing you didn't know. That's the best way to attack these problems, is to just fill in what you know, work out what you can, and then use those workouts to put in where there's more than one thing that you didn't know to start with. And then it just falls into place maybe about 5-10 minutes. And that's the hardest part of this quiz, is that other problem that's like this one on the quiz. But this problem I just did for you, that's on the quiz. So if you get anything wrong on that, you are, never mind. I mean, don't get anything wrong on that, okay? You will not go home empty-handed on this quiz. Now, on the other side is just an income statement kind of problem. Just work out a couple of things like net income and your taxes and all that. And then there's one where I give you some information about a transaction, and you tell me whether that is a source of cash or a use of cash. Okay, so you give me a plus or a minus. So I said accounts payable increased. Is that a source of cash, a plus, or a use of cash, a minus? Top. What is it? Okay, anyone? Accounts payable increases. Is that a source or a use of cash? It's a source. Look, you didn't have to pay a bill. I said I paid it. Man, I just paid $50,000. Let me write down minus $50,000. I didn't pay it. So that's a source of cash because I'm waiting to pay a bill. So even though I said I paid it, I didn't. So it's actually money that goes up on the real life of my on my real cash flow. It actually caused my real cash flow to be more than what my net income said, because I claimed I paid a bill, but I didn't pay it. So my net income, my cash flow, is higher than my net income because I said I paid something that I didn't pay. You follow the logic? Let's try another one. Okay, I had depreciation expense of $100,000 this year. Is that a source or a use?
Source,
yeah. Because I said I had depreciation, but there isn't anyone out there I wrote a depreciation check to. I sort of like did a legal lie. Okay, how about this one? Even though it won't show up on a financial statement, I actually paid off, I retired a $10 million bond issue. Is that a source of cash or a use of cash?
Use.
Yeah, use. It's money out of my pocket, but it doesn't show up anywhere on my financial statements, on my income statement, even though I paid that money out. Same would be true if I build a new building. I built a $5 million new office building. That is actually a use of cash because I didn't put anywhere on my financial statement, on my income statement, I spent $5 million. I did, but it's not on my income statement. So I have to say, in reality, I used $5 million. It isn't there on the income statement. So that is a use, a drop in my net income. If you can do that, you can do this, that part of the quiz. You got 45 minutes to do it. Make sure that you do the worksheet before you go into the quiz. And obviously, I'm not going to be watching you on your cam so you can work together. It won't be cheating if you work together on this. So that's all I have for you today. I thank you.